The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We are back. One more hour to go, and we've had a busy one. Mike Oresko joining us earlier, the commissioner of the AAC. Of course, we had Bill Hancock on Friday. We're trying to talk to as many of the major moguls in college athletics as we can, and we'll talk to more as the week goes on. Also, John Wilner from the Pac-12 covers the Pac-12 better than anyone at the Mercury News. We have also we'll also talk to Kyle Peterson in a few minutes. Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, was by. And let's get back to your calls. Smoove is up next. Good afternoon. Hey there. Smoove?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, man. Hey, it's nice, baby, to get with you, man. You know what I'm saying? But my point is that I'm very, very excited about this 12-team playoff thing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's very, very interesting. It's going to be very, very interesting. Reason I say that is because you take the Cincinnati's, take the Houston's, you know, all those type teams like that there. You know, look, they're going to spoil. They're going to wreck some big teams, man. I'm serious about that. Those big teams are scared of those type of teams. Now, look back at the year that Troy beat LSU.
Right.
I think Alabama got beat by one of those teams, you know, a while back. I'm very excited about this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has happened. I mean, there are upsets. I mean, Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year at Alabama, and he lost to UAB his first year at LSU.
Yeah, but I'm very excited about, you know what I'm saying, those small teams like that with high power offenses, you know what I'm saying, gets an opportunity to really shine. Because who was that? South Florida went undefeated and didn't even get in the playoff?
Central Florida.
Okay. It was a Florida team. They had a championship celebration and all that stuff. Okay, now they actually gets a chance to prove themselves now. You know what I'm saying? They're in there with the big dogs, and I'm very excited about this playoff because it gives those small teams like that an opportunity to play, you know, and get in there with the big dogs. So,
well, you know, you're right. I agree with you 100%. It also gives the big dogs multiple opportunities to be in the playoff as well. I mean, if you're a Florida fan, you would have been in last year. LSU would have been a number of times. Auburn would have been in,
yeah.
As opposed to only one getting in, or maybe that rare year when we have, and I think it's only happened once, when we've seen Alabama and Georgia from the same conference in. Last year we had two from the ACC, but it was a little bit of an asterisk here.
I just think 12 is better than what we was doing. So, you know, it gives the Power Five an opportunity to get in. And, you know, all those teams, if you good and you say you good, you feel the thank you good, you know, you get an opportunity to play now. So, you know, let's just see what happens.
I agree, Smoove. I'm a born cynic, and I have not really agreed very often with what they've come up with. I think they've been too slow to change, but I find no fault with what they've done. And I think there's in talking to people today, there's some really fundamental reasons why they went to 12, and I think it really helps the SEC more than any other conference.
No doubt about that. The SEC has grown top to bottom, you know. But hey, you know, we've had a rude awakening also. But you know, I'm very excited, Paul, to be able to talk to you. You know what I'm saying? I've spoke with you in recent years. I listen to you all the time. I don't always get in, but I'm very excited about this moment here because I just wanted to share my opinion.
Well, Smoove, I would urge you to call again. This has been a fantastic call, and let's keep this going.
Oh, yeah. My conversation, when I do get into you, Paul, I'm telling you, it's going to be intriguing, very intriguing.
No, there's no doubt. I'm just sorry we haven't talked more often because You're a fantastic caller.
Oh, yeah. Roll Tide, baby.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul.
You got it. I like this guy. Not shy either. Steven is up next. Hello, Steven.
Hey, Paul. What's going on, buddy?
We're okay. Thank you.
I see that this 12-team playoff is about to go to be real. So I know I talked to you last week about me not liking it, but I still got a couple problems with this 12 teams. If you
sure.
have a second, I'll explain my take to you.
Take your time.
For one, people keep saying that it's not automatic bid. Well, I'm going to disagree with them. So the six conference champions that are the highest rated to get automatic bids, correct?
That is correct.
So that is an automatic qualifier. They are automatic qualifying by being conference champions if they're the sixth highest rated. In my math, there's only 10 Division One schools that play Division One football. I'm not talking about the FCS. I'm talking about the FBS. So six out of the 10 are going to get rated. You give me a scenario where the Power Five is going to get left out. I can't see it because who's rating these teams? The College Football Committee is. So are they really going to leave out the Pac 12 or 10 or whatever they are now to include a Sun Belt and an AAC champion?
Probably not. But unless the Pac 12 really, there have been a couple of years they did not have a representative worthy.
No, exactly. So, but what I'm saying is the money players are going to be involved. The College Football Playoff Committee, last time I checked, I haven't seen a Sun Belt commissioner or an AAC commissioner or a Conference USA commissioner or a MAC commissioner sitting on that committee.
Well, the Mountain West commissioner was one of the four who made this recommendation.
Okay. But I'm still, I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios that we can play out. I mean, you can go look through history and you have, and I'm going to go back to when Tennessee was really good. I think they got beat by a mediocre LSU team in the SEC championship game back in the 90s.
It was actually, what year was it? It was 2001, I believe.
Okay, so it was when Tennessee was really good. Right?
Yeah, it was Nick Saban's first big moment.
Okay.
At LSU.
I will say with LSU, and I don't know how many losses they had that year, but they would have made it in as a conference champion probably because by beating a top-ranked Tennessee team, they would have probably jumped whatever mid-group of five conference champion by that win. So, I mean, that's my point. It's going to be really hard to leave a group of five conference out. So in my opinion, the Power Five out. So in my opinion, what this is doing is giving the bone to one group of five conference champion, and I don't think we'll ever see two group of five conference champions again.
I think in theory you are correct. I can't find a legitimate reason to say you're not. Hey, thank you for the call. I'm glad to hear from you. Let me try Tommy again. We tried earlier. We missed. We'll try it again. Tommy, you're on the air. Tommy, can you hear me? Sounds like some lyrics from a famous rock opera. Roger Daltrey would be proud. Bill, Jim is up next in Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. I listened to you a lot. Pat Forney kind of answered my question with how the structure of is it home for the first two rounds, then the bowls. But how do you think that will affect, you know, if the SEC gets three or four and one of them's traveling to Ann Arbor or Boise, Idaho, how do you think that affects them?
That would not be cool. That would not be kind. That would be a really tough matchup. I think I saw in one of the models we saw I had the other day that somebody did, what would it have been? I think there was a Florida at Wisconsin game a year or two ago. And I mean, personally, I would love to see it. but I think we know the idea of a Sun Belt school playing in late December in Madison, Wisconsin would favor Wisconsin tremendously.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of my things as being a Northerner. All the bowl games are in the South and West. So it's always like we're travel. They're supposed to be neutral games, but they're really not.
No, you're right.
Like Penn State versus USC, Penn State was listed as the home team playing in USC Stadium.
Well, I mean, in the end, I think we need more of that, and I'm a little disappointed that the second round is going to neutral site. I mean, I hate neutral site games. I mean, how many more times do we need to say that? I mean, we need more of these campus games. Let's take a break. Kyle Peterson, big game tonight in Starkville. We are just 45 minutes away, and we will talk to him next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are back, and we're about 45 minutes away from the first pitch in Starkville, and our next guest will be part of the broadcast team on ESPN2. Kyle Peterson joining us. And Kyle, thanks for making time. Let's talk about this game. There's a lot of other issues to talk about, but just a preview of what you expect in the last game of the baseball season before we get to Omaha.
I think it'll be loud, I'll tell you that. I mean, the environment in Starkville has been so good all the way through it. We know what it always is, but when you get to the postseason, biggest super regional crowd that we've ever had 2 years ago in game one. The weather looks to be perfect. They were lined up at the gates again tonight. And it'll be interesting because Notre Dame offensively has been better than Mississippi State for the first two games. Notre Dame's hit 19 home runs in 5 games in the postseason. That's more than anybody else has hit. And they've hit 4 in the 2 super regional games. So I think the biggest thing tonight is Houston Harding, who came in last week in a relief appearance but went 5 innings out of the bullpen, really solidified things against Campbell. How deep can he go today? Because the advantage that State has is an advantage in the bullpen. There's more depth, there's more swing and miss in that Mississippi State bullpen. But the further Harding can take you, the bigger that advantage gets.
Let's talk about this Notre Dame team a little bit more because they had a close call Saturday night, or we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Last night they were pure money. I mean, as you diagram the game in terms of what you're looking for early, what should we all be paying the closest attention to?
Well, they came in as the best defensive team in the country. So there's not as much swing and miss as you'll see from Mississippi State's pitching staff. But what they can do is they can really pick it up and throw it. They didn't do that in game one. That's what cost them the game. They made 4 errors. Notre Dame hadn't made 2 errors in a game the entire – excuse me, hadn't made 3 errors in an entire game. Coming into the Super Regional, they made 4 in game one. Yesterday was a lot tighter. It looked more like the Notre Dame team that we've seen. The other is there's experience in this lineup. And Nico Cavadas gets all of the headlines coming in, which he should have. He hit 5 home runs in the regional. But really, it's been the other guys in this lineup, the first 2 games of this Super, that offensively has been there. There's a lot of upperclassmen. And while they haven't performed in this environment, they've played a lot of college baseball. And you can see it because a lot of teams that come into a spot like this in Starkville with 14,000 people, they're affected by the environment. And that's the one thing that I've seen from Notre Dame. I don't think the environment has got them through the first 2 games. And I'd be surprised if it gets them tonight.
And let me turn that around. This is a huge event. I mean, Starkville at times is the epicenter of college baseball. And you would think, I don't know how much this matters, but I'll let you explain the pressure. We all know what's at stake. How does it play on the Mississippi side?
You know, what's interesting, I feel like we might have saw a little bit of that last night with Arkansas, to where that environment is great, but then as it's close or if it's tied or if you're down as you go on, that environment that's so loud when you're ahead can feel like a nervous environment. And it feels like a nervous environment because it is. You've got a fan base that is there because they're going to do everything they can to have you win. So I think your point is well taken in this. We talked to Chris Lemonis, the head coach from Mississippi State, last night in game, and asked him about the environment. And he said, we got to give him something to cheer for. And if we don't give him anything to cheer for, then we're not going to have much environment. I think that's the key on both sides tonight. Notre Dame took the crowd out of it last night because after the first inning, there was only one base runner that got into scoring position. If you can do that, it doesn't allow the crowd to get in it. If you're State and you put a few up early and this place is rocking right away, that's where the advantage spends.
And Kyle, let me get to what happened last night in Fayetteville. And I mean, you live this like nobody else. In terms of big surprises and upsets, I mean, these things have happened before, but put it into perspective, what you saw, I don't know how much you saw because you were doing a game, but just in terms of what this game has meant and the surprising element of it.
So I got a computer right next to me. I wanted to do the game, and I had Arkansas on one side, and I had our game on the other, and obviously was paying attention to our game, but I still wanted to follow at the same time. I would just tell you this, that it shouldn't take away from what Arkansas' season was. If you go through the SEC, you win all 10 weeks, and you win the SEC tournament, you were an elite baseball team. They proved that. And it better not take away from the season that Kevin Copps had. Paul, it is the best pitching season that since I've been doing this, and it's almost 20 years at this point, I've never seen a pitcher have a better season front to back. And for Kevin Copps to go out there and go as deep as he did, given the workload he's had in the last 2 weeks, is pretty incredible. But I think then you turn to the NC State side. They got to be 21-2 in the opener. 21-2 in that environment. You come out the next day, then they won 2 one-run games and do it yesterday with a home run late in the ballgame to spin it. NC State's really good. They had won 17 of the last 21 coming in. They were as good as anybody in the ACC the back half of the ACC season. And we talk about environment. Clearly, they were not affected by the environment and maybe even fed off it as that game went on. It is a series that when we look back over the last 10 years that surprises. Yeah, it's a surprise because of how good Arkansas was. NC State's a really good baseball team.
And before you go, I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the two that are already heading to Omaha, and that's Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Different paths, but still spectacular years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got Vanderbilt, who is a mainstay in Omaha, and Rocker Leiter, we've been talking about the entire season, rightfully so. Those two have been unbelievable. And it was pitching that really got Vanderbilt through the Super. They were two low-scoring games, and those two were great. Tennessee's as exciting a team as we've had this year, and really as exciting a story. I mean, the baseball history in Tennessee, you got to go back 15 years before there's anything that's really meaningful from a baseball history standpoint. They're creating a lot more history now. That the setting at Lindsey Nelson, outside of Lindsey Nelson, I mean, there was 1,000, 2,000 fans that were watching the game on TV because they couldn't get in. It's really cool to see that type of an environment return within this league because, I mean, you see it every week, man. You see it in all sports. These fan bases are so passionate that if you give them something to cheer for, and Tony Vitello in Tennessee has done that, they are going to show up. And they showed up this weekend and made a huge difference.
And Kyle, if we could close with the man who bowed out last night, Paul Maneri, on what he has meant and his legacy at LSU.
I mean, he's a titan in the game. I'm fortunate to call Paul a friend and have gotten to know him pretty well over the last 15 years. I talked about this with somebody earlier today. You know, the head baseball coach at LSU is not a baseball coach. He's a CEO. And you have to be in a setting like that because of all the other things that he has to handle. And I think what Paul won a national title, I think 7 of 10 years at one point, they were a top 8 national seed. In that league, that's unheard of. But the way that he handled the program and to come in, you know, I know it wasn't directly after Skip, but to follow in Skip's legacy is not an easy thing for anyone to do. I would hope that the fan base at LSU realizes the man that they had for 15 years because He's a Hall of Fame coach. He won him a national championship. He taught a lot of kids a lot of lessons that they won't forget the rest of their life. And every single day, man, he bled purple and gold, and he believed in that program. I'm sure he will move on forward. Lord knows he's earned the right to play a lot of golf, and I hope that he does. But he made our sport better for a long time. And while I'm sad to see him go, he has more than earned the right to go out whenever he wants, and I'm glad to see him smiling when he does.
Kyle, thank you so much. We'll be watching in a couple of minutes. We'll let you get back to preparation. And we are heading to a break. That game, 35 minutes from now on ESPN2. And Kyle, of course, will be part of the call. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back, and we still have 30 minutes to go, and we would love to hear from you at 855-242-7285. We've had our final guest, but not our final call. So let's check in with Richard in Texas. Hey, Richard. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
I love Booger. He's a great commentator. He's a great football player, but I don't understand why he and some other folks are so concerned about playing. So they talk about playing so many games in the playoffs, increasing to 12 teams. Now, Division II, Division III, NAIA, and junior college have been having college football playoffs for years. In 2019, Division II had 20 teams in their playoff bracket. Division III, 32. NAIA, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't know NAIA still existed, but they had 16 in theirs, and I couldn't find what junior college had. So I just don't understand why Division I with 12 teams is too many. Can you explain that to me, please?
I was a little surprised by Booger. I think Booger reacted very quickly, and I don't think I say this as a close friend of his. I don't think he's been paying close attention to what's been going on. I think he just gave an opinion, and I was with him when he gave his first opinion the day before on ESPN, and I just think he needs to let it evolve, and I bet he will. But I was shocked when I heard it at first, but I talked to a number of people and have come around significantly.
Okay, Paul. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate it. It was a good point to make, certainly. Let us continue with Jeff, who is in New York. Hello, Jeff. Thank you. Good afternoon.
This is a surreal experience, Paul. I appreciate the honor.
Thank you.
I listen to you literally all the time, all day, and it's an honor. Unfortunately, Paul, I had to lighten you up because I kind of had to come over the top. I have two pressing issues. One is that I find it kind of odd, not just necessarily on you, but for the callers as well. Later last week, there was a story about the former head coach from Michigan I won't mention him by name. I don't think he has the honor of being mentioned by first name. But there was the allegations that had came out that were confirmed by his son. And it was the top of the marquee at ESPN, but, yeah, I didn't really hear much about it. We heard much about the expansion for the college football playoff, which isn't going to be an issue for this season. It's something that's at least a year and a half down the road. But nonetheless, we were quiet on that former head coach from Michigan. And I don't think that he should be able to keep a legacy. A legacy is a gift. It's an honor. And if what is true about the allegations that have come forward, his statue not only needs to be removed, but he should not continue to be able to just slide and be able to almost just be swept under the rug and forgot about. I find that kind of odd, and it's just a little disturbing. I do have a second issue. I don't know if you want me to.
Yeah, let me address the first one. You know what? You make a really good point, Jeff. And we had we talked to Dan Wetzel about this. I believe it was Friday, who's covered Sandusky. And who has covered the Schembechler thing. This is not an excuse. This is just stating something that we already know. It fell the same day as the CFP conversation. And I also think it's a very difficult conversation to have. And I'm just stating a couple of thoughts. However, in Bo Schembechler, we are talking about one of the most iconic coaches in college football history. He mentored, of course, the current coach at the University of Michigan, who in the past has defended Bo, even when these allegations were starting to come out. And I don't think you've heard the end of it. I've seen colleagues of mine write about it, but for some reason, and I don't understand it, this story is not getting the traction that others have gotten. Remember the Nassar story at Michigan State. It took a while for that to become one of the ugliest and horrific stories in history.
All fair points. Nonetheless, I do find it kind of odd. Like I said, not as that your responsibility, but I do find it odd. But even the callers, they haven't really taken on the responsibility to mention it. But Paul, I have a second issue. I'll be super quick.
Sure.
That is much more important. What is it, your issue with the bowl games, Paul? Paul, I live in New York, but I just recently moved from Las Vegas. And I moved to Las Vegas for the sole purpose of betting on college football. It was an unbelievable experience. Paul, even the most minuscule games, Eastern Michigan, Kent State, or even bowl games that take place December, early December, those games have a betting line for them. And they usually have a line wrapped around the counter for people wanting action. What is it with you? What is it with the callers who want to get rid of these bowl games? These bowl games do matter. I don't care.
Let me say this, Jeff.
These bowl games matter to bettors, and bettors is the sports betting industry. Of course, as we know, is exploding, and we stay interested and invested in these games past the point of a blowout. So my attention is from the very first kickoff until the end of the game. These games matter, and I wish that you would kind of stick up for some of these bowl games in the college as well, because you just keep kind of bashing. College football is the longest offseason of any sport. All we have is speculation. We only have 3 months of football. Why are you all wanting to restrict or contract the number of games? Like, this is what we have for most of the season. It's just speculation. If there's 43 bowl games, we should have 44. I mean, I really don't think we have enough, and I wish that someone would stick up and stand up for the system. Paul, thank you for letting me get on here. It is an honor to speak with you. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you. Well, first of all, I don't have anything against the bowl games other than the fact there are too many. I'm not going to ruin your fun. I don't want to upset anybody's DraftKings pool tonight, but there shouldn't be 44 bowl games. A bowl game should be a reward for a good season, not a crummy season that somehow you manage to get to 5 or 6 games, whatever the number is. And I think too many coaches and too many athletic directors and fan bases have used bowl games as a crutch. I did it a few minutes ago. I'll call myself out when I was talking about Tennessee, but those are extenuating circumstances. You have a brand new coach. You took over a dumpster fire. You got the program under investigation. And I simply said getting to become bowl eligible would be considered significant. Sometimes you can use it in the proper form. But I will say to all my friends out there who are betting on everything, if there were three fewer bowl games, I'm sure you could find something else to bet on. I don't think because you can have a betting line means you should have a bowl game. I'm not against bowl games. I've spoken to the Bowl Association a couple of years ago. I understand how hard all of these men and women work, and I am for them, although it's gotten out of control. And I'm not trying to be a traditionalist. I'm not trying to be a stodgy old guy saying, remember when. That's not me. But I just think, trying to find schools to go to bowl games is not really where this concept began. I think in many cities it's an important event. In a lot of cities it's really become a burden. And without the television sponsorship, it wouldn't even exist. Thank you for the call. Let's continue. William is up next. William, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
How you doing? I watched the SEC story for your show come on today and talking about Auburn and how the impact that Bo Jackson and Barkley and Big Hurt played in their program and turning it around. And I just wondered how your opinion would be if you had to pick three people who has that impact on Alabama. Not so much turning them around, but putting them on the level that they are today. And I would say personally, for me, it wouldn't be three football players. Two of them would be coaches. It would be Bear Bryant and Nick Saban. And I say that because they don't have just influence on Alabama. They have an influence on everything that goes on in college football. And it's all represented by Alabama. You might know your name, but I just wondered what your opinion would be on that.
Well, William, there's no way I could argue that. I'm pretty close to Alabama, having lived there most of my life. So, and having had the honor of covering the end of one man's tenure in Coach Bryan, and been blessed to have been there for every day of Nick Saban's. So I agree with you. I do think when you get to players, it's a little more difficult. Because I was a kid watching Joe Namath. To me, that's the name that stands out. And I also think Joe Namath is important for another reason. Joe Namath was a positive for Alabama at a time when very little else was going right in the state. Now, I'm not going to relitigate the 60s, but you know what I'm talking about. And so, I think he's a standalone player. He's not the only one by any stretch. There are countless Alabama players over the course of history who have played a critical role in the advancement of the university.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think one of Bear Bryant's great attributes was he was able to take players and get the best out of them. And Nick Saban, he's been able to take the best high school players in the world and make them into the best team players. It's kind of opposite there on the recruiting thing. You know, Bear got a lot of people from in-state, and Nick Saban gets a lot of players from everywhere. But they got these huge egos, but he turns them into team players, and you see what happened when all that time.
Well, William, when you think about the sport of football, college football, and you look at Newt Rockne and Woody Hayes and Bud Wilkinson, and I'll leave out 1,000 coaches that deserve to be included, Daryl Royal. And when it turns out that, at least from my view, and I know for yours, that the two greatest college football coaches of all time happen to come from the same school, it's just remarkable. About how lucky those of us who have lived in Alabama or been a part of that, around that program, who have seen this. And it's really not, and we're not talking about 100 years difference. Paul Bryant, his last game at Alabama was December 29th, 1982, and Nick Saban came along in 2007. That's a long time if you weren't born until 2005, but it's not that long if you've had some tire tracks on you. So it is unbelievable when you think about it. And I don't think there's really a big argument. And I think it's difficult to go back in time to Newt Rockne. He's maybe the most influential figure in the history of the game. And there've been a million other great coaches at Notre Dame and even at Alabama, but if you're making an opinion today, I think you're objective, I think you have to land on those two. Hey, I appreciate it very much. We better get to a break here so we don't run out of time. We still have a little bit of time left for you to get in, and we will do that right after this. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.